Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
Welcome back to Kaya Biz. Thanks for staying with us. So we move tack now and we look at what SARS is doing in terms of its compliance programs. So it recorded a 16.7% increase in what it calls compliance collection. And that essentially means that it brought in 304 billion rand by basically chasing after taxpayers. So this was revealed in the 18th annual edition of the Tax Statistics Bulletin, confirming the effectiveness of the revenue collectors' compliance-driven initiatives. Now, to unpack this, I'm joined by Jashwin Baiju, partner and head of strategic engagement and compliance at Tax Consulting South Africa. A very good evening to you, Jashwin.
Good evening, and thanks for having me on today.
So, Jashwin, I am reading this report by, the write-up by your Tax Consulting South Africa, and it seems to me that there is an issue here. I would think that, you know, getting people to comply with paying over their taxes and making sure that it is handed over to SARS would be a good thing, but somehow, I feel like you are disagreeing in the way it's being done.
So, you should always view it as a bit of a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is, while the collection of tax revenue is essential for maintaining the infrastructure of any country, right? So, So we agree on that point. And there are ways and means of doing so. And we do fully support a compliance-centric approach that is taken by SARS. However, at the same time, it must be borne in mind that there are occasions where there may be a misstep, or beyond that, due to a lack of taxpayer education, especially in something new and diverse like crypto asset taxation. That lack of education results in certain disclosures not being wholly accurate or complete, and that may then lead SARS very quickly down a punitive path, whereas as part of their strategic objectives, yes, non-compliance should be made hard and costly, fully agreed. But on the flip side, well, voluntary compliance should be easy. And that's why what is done in the high wealth individual division is so important, because these individuals are assigned dedicated relationship managers within SARS to help them out, to guide them in disclosing and being fully complete in all of their tax affairs.
Got you. Okay, so if we unpack that further, right, when we look, let's look specifically in terms of where they're going, right? And so we have the high net worth individuals, and then you also have the cyber traders. Take us through the cyber traders. Where are they actually targeting in terms of this? Are you looking at returns? It's not cyber, crypto traders.
Crypto. So actually, where they're targeting is bank statements. Processing of bank statements reveals bank credits, which is transfers coming in that can, you know, be rationalized, however, but on face value comes across as income. In SARS's view, this is now undisclosed income, and they proceed with an audit whereafter the crypto trader or investor must now explain each and every transaction by going through a bank reconciliation process and a full response to SARS's notification of audit.
Essentially, this could actually push people away from actually investing in this, because then they have to deal with SARS at the end of the day. Is this a concern, a risk here?
So both yes and no. And the reason I say that is, while in terms of the stats released, it was very early this year or late last year, while SARS picked up 5.8 million South Africans engaging in crypto transactions that were unreported. Now, in terms of the next step forward, while tax authorities worldwide, right, are intensifying their efforts to maintain transparency and to combat any tax evasion as the cryptocurrency market rapidly expands and the global financial landscape evolves. And as much as these frameworks have been in place, South Africa and SARS, by extension, have finally come to the party. And most recently, and when I say most recently, I mean literally last week, and effective the 1st of March next year, while South Africa has now adopted the OECD's crypto asset reporting framework and the updated common reporting standards. This comes with an automatic exchange of tax-related information concerning both traditional financial assets and emerging crypto asset classes. Now, this is not by any means a deterrence, but more a case of regulating the correct reporting structures. And as I said, South Africa is a little bit late to the party, but the crypto asset framework, or the CAF as it's called, has been around for a couple of years and has seen great success in other countries.
Some would argue, though, that it's a little bit over-regulation at the same time.
If we look at over-regulation, well, we've got to first consider your normal income disclosure, right? So, I mean, if you think about your salary or any sort of additional income, well, your salary, you know, your company will withhold the tax, they'll issue you with a pay slip, they will pay it over to SARS, your normal payroll taxes. Then you've got your secondary stream of income. And the same position can then be said to say, well, why am I as a South African being further taxed on interest I earn on my investment, which investment was made with post-tax money? So again, it's additional regulation. But on the crypto side, because it evolves so quickly and because it's almost like an unknown, there is more stringent reporting requirements.
For those that are not in the know, or I suppose this is a warning to those that are holding crypto, to make sure that they are complying, because it looks like SARS is getting extremely tough in terms of transgressions and for those that are not complying. So when you look at the historical audits that they are holding, if you don't have any of the information and you can't actually comply and give SARS the information that they need, they're looking at some very heavy penalties and even looking at jail time.
That is correct. So when it comes to an audit, a percentage-based penalty is imposed, called an understatement penalty, right? It's based on a taxpayer's behavior, and there's a behavioral table contained in the tax legislation. And that, as a worst case, where it's evasion, repeat offense, etc., goes up to 200% of the penalties due. Now, on the audit side, so the first thing to remember is when you get a notice of audit, you don't have a very long time to respond. SARS will stipulate a time frame. And what we've seen is, especially where it considers multiple trading platforms over multiple periods, is they are open to granting an extension where the request for extension is done correctly and legally. Now, that then allows the taxpayer themselves or their attorney or their accountant, whoever, to have sufficient time to collate the documents and prepare a very robust response. This must include key determinations of transactions on the platform, and it is possible to categorize your crypto into two classes, or the proceeds from that crypto. The one is your gross income, in which case you are taxed at your marginal rates. As you know, that's up to 45%. On the other hand, where you have held on to that crypto for a period with investment intent and other objective factors are considered in your favor, you can then say, well, that portion is actually a capital disposal, and therefore I will pay capital gains tax on it, which is significantly lower. So that is what taxpayers need to be aware of, especially when they get these notices of audit. One, get an accountant or an attorney, ideally an attorney because you have legal professional privilege. Two, ask them to file a notice of extension. And three, immediately start collating all of the documents per period so they can do a bank reconciliation against your CSVs, which is the transactional information you obtain from your crypto asset platforms.
Is it too late to wait until there's an audit? Is there enough information that's being filtered through in terms of this additional layer of documents that are required and information that you would need to supply to SARS? I mean, is there enough information to people wanting to invest in the market, get into crypto? Are they actually collating the information that should SARS decide, okay, we need to do an audit on you, you have all of this information? Do they know? Is there enough information out there?
Honestly, no. So from a perspective of legislative or procedural guidance, it is severely lacking. And that's why you'll recall earlier I mentioned there's a lack of taxpayer education on the topic.
Mm.
And then secondly, well, ideally, SARS must be approached before the audit, because the reason I say this is where SARS are approached before the audit, before the default comes to their attention, taxpayers may then enter into the voluntary disclosure program. And the purpose of this is, one, it protects taxpayers from penalties being imposed, and two, it offers a degree of protection from criminal charges. Whereas if SARS approaches you first in terms of an audit or request for information or whatever the case may be, you lose the access to that specific remedy because it is no longer voluntary. You've been asked, and now you must offer up the information.
SARS is seriously clamping down. I mean, they're closing out all of these holes that have been open for a while, really closing in. But they also do offer you that that opportunity to have a discussion with them, and like you say, the voluntary disclosure gives you a bit of time as well. But I think raising the awareness and having some knowledge around what you're doing and what's needed should you get into trading is very important. Joshua, before I let you go, we're also looking at the high net worth individuals, because there was a substantial amount collected inside of this figure of $304 billion that came from high net worth individuals.
Yeah, correct. So, I mean, when it comes to the high net worth individuals, and I've said this earlier, that, you know, our view is we're a very compliance-centric business. So from that hundreds of millions, I would say probably 80 to 90 million is attributed from our clients, where they've needed to pay their taxes, and, you know, it is what it is. So with your high net worth individuals, we must remember that often their tax affairs are a lot more complex, there's a lot more intricacies, there are numerous advisors, various moving parts in different countries. And that all needs to be tied together. That's why they have a relationship manager. And from a high net worth perspective, while it actually makes the process, although it is highly complicated, but having that direct relationship manager does speed up the process, because you have one single point of contact. And your high net worth individuals, what we typically see is their non-compliance stems from offshore trusts and investment structures that they were not too sure how to treat, or they were not sure when certain shares would vest and things like that, the more technical items. And with high net worths, a pattern we have picked up is they are not trying to be non-compliant. They just genuinely cannot keep track of all of their financial affairs across the world. And that is where having that key relationship with the high wealth division comes in.
Got it. So obviously, if you're making so much of money, you can set aside some of that money to actually get somebody to take care of all your affairs, so that you avoid this kind of smashing with the South African Revenue Service, right? Joshwin?
That's exactly correct, yeah.
Joshwin, we're going to have to leave you there. Thank you very much for your insights and giving us all this information. Joshwin Abaiju, partner and head of strategic engagement at and compliance at Tax Consulting South Africa.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.